Right. By the way, I'm more used to walking around, interacting with people. Unfortunately, as you can see, I have been leashed to the wire. So bear with me if I'm not interactive enough. My name is CJ, and originally I was from Singapore. Right, and but now I'm actually based in Shanghai. I've been in China for the past 5 years. And what I do is to do lots of consulting, training in areas of sales and marketing, largely in sales. And when I mean sales, we do things like sales leadership programs. We develop salespeople how to be leaders for their teams if you want to promote sales leaders and managers, or to be more strategic if you want to promote people to senior sales positions like VP sales or sales directors or national sales directors in China. Our main clientele, what we do, is a lot to do with foreign companies in China, whether they are selling into China or they would like to develop Chinese salespeople that can sell on an international level. Okay, so these are some of the things that we do. Okay, am I on the mic?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay, cool. Okay. Right, so without further ado, before we really start, just like to find out, we have a very diverse group today. We've got people from Sweden. Yay! We've got people from Finland. Yep, right. And we got Hong Kong. Yay! And we got people from the United States of America.
Wow!
Anybody I missed? Yeah. Oh, sorry. Denmark, of course. Yes. We got Scandinavia around. Right. This is becoming a Scandinavian meeting. Okay. Anyways, I'd just like to find out before we start. Which aspects are you? What brings you here today to this session? No, we got like 10,001 sessions outside. So, what brings you to this room now? Any suggestions? Yep. Oh, you're developing sales training program, but why this particular? Okay. Right, want to see China. Right. What else? What brings you to? Right. Okay. Just want to know the Chinese market. What to do there? Obviously, they're all different, aren't they? Yeah. Okay. So, any other reasons? Why? What brings you here today? So we've got reasons on sales, developing sales program. We've got reasons about going into China and understanding what to look out for in the Chinese market. Yes, Johan. Right, so looking at Chinese audience from a trainee's point of view. Right, great. Well, any other reasons? That's it? One more?
Last one.
Okay, what are the differences between leading European sales forces and Chinese sales forces? Can't do that. I can tell you about China. I can make comparisons with what I do know about the West, especially about Singapore, which is halfway between the West and the East. Right? So we will make some comparisons here and there. But basically, you can make your own judgments. And, oh, by the way, we'd like to have this as interactive as possible. I'm sure that as we go along our presentation, there may be some questions, there may be certain things that you want to prompt. So please feel free to interject, to raise your hands and just ask me any questions in the interim. Right, this session is not about the slides because you can download the slides in the ASTD website. Right, this session is about getting the information that you want, whether it's about sales training or it's about China, or both. Right? Thank you. So, why sales? This is adapted from Sun Tzu Art of War. So basically what we view sales is, and as a reason why sales training, what we view sales as the lifeblood of a company, a matter of life and death, survival or extinction. Indeed, something that needs to be studied, applied, and remodified consistently, and which is why we really want to know what's the difference if we're doing in China versus in Europe or in other parts of the world. Courtesy to Hathwaite, this is a research done by Hathwaite that around 87% of what is learned in a sales training session, for that matter, in any training session, 87% of what is learned in a sales training session will be lost after 1 month of the sales training. So you're wasting your time, you're wasting your money, you're wasting your people's opportunity costs and so on by sitting in the sales training. Hopefully not like this. Right, so that's it. And there are reasons why, which I'll illustrate in a while. So If you're looking into this session particularly, there are three parts to it. Number one, we want to know exactly what's happening in China, how bad the situation is. Two, what are some of the causes behind the situation in China right now? Some of them may be the same as anywhere else in the world. Some of them may be different. So we'll look at it. And of course, how are you going to rectify the whole situation by paying less and getting better results? Right. How many of you would like to have less costs for sales training and get better results? Anyone? Yeah, of course. Yeah, especially in times like this, you know, we're talking about budget cuts. So, when it comes to budget cuts, no one really cuts as much or as fast or as ferocious as those guys in China. You know, there's a saying that, you know, you do business with whether the Jews are Chinese. It's not a racial remark here. It's just cultural difference. You are really dealing with people who are who's got very strong expertise in counting every single dollar, every single cent. So when it comes to budget cuts, the Chinese really know how to cut. But the thing is, while we are cutting, we will also want to find out how we can deliver similar results, or at least we don't compromise too much about the results when we want to reduce costs. So the first part, here's a case study. Sam is a new salesperson and showed a lot of promise during his initial training with this new company. And when he went on his work, he also puts in lots of effort. Hardworking, promising young guy. Still, after 3 months, there weren't any results generated. 3 months being the typical time for someone new to generate some results. All right, so 3 months, nothing happened. What would you do? Any suggestions?
In China or what
would we do? You do, it doesn't matter. What do you think China will do?
Fire him,
okay. Now, that is the second worst option. That is one more option that's worse than that. That people really do in China. What else? Fire him.
I will coach him, of course.
You coach him, right? What else can you do?
Is this in China?
It can be anywhere. You can make your own assumptions. You can say what you would do in the West and what will you do in China. Okay, find the causes. Okay. Right. And what do you think will happen in China?
Typically?
Yeah.
Probably fire,
yeah? Okay, this is a real case here. What happened is this is actually a media company. It's actually Swiss-owned, but it's actually run by a Canadian guy but has been living in Hong Kong for many, many years. So he's more Sinonized in a way. So he runs business like a small little Chinese outfit. So when they got new guys, they went through this initial training. And when the new guys don't perform, there are two options. They get feedback from the sales managers on the attitude stuff. Is this guy hardworking enough, making enough calls? How's the attitude like? And if the attitude is bad, of course, they fire them. If the attitude is good, what they do is they send the guys to the same training again. Now, what is the definition of insanity? Doing the same things over and over again and expect different results, right? So they make the assumption that, oh, this guy probably didn't learn well in the first training, so it's a bit thick, you know? So we just sent him for a retraining again in the same stuff. Not true. What's happening in China is, again, there is a lack of finding out the real causes. It could be, there are the host of reasons. It could be you hired the wrong guy for a wrong sales job. In terms of sales jobs, there are generally two kinds. Those that go on knocking on doors and develop new businesses, those we call hunters. And those that grow existing businesses from existing customers, right? And those what we call farmers. And if you were to get a hunter to do a farmer's job or a farmer to do a hunter's job, you're in trouble. You're just ready for a major disaster. So it could be a hiring problem. It could be that there may be certain things that didn't went well with Sam's. It could also be that the training program is outdated. And which in this real case, it was. it had to be revamped from the ground up because it was based on something that was existing in 1925. It was the huts. Seriously, there were research done that a lot of sales programs out there, sales training programs out there, not just in China but everywhere else in the world, are based on sales techniques or sales practices as early as 1925. It's those handling objection stuff, heavy on the closing, very aggressive closing, and you see the customer, you close them, you don't let them go until you close them. That sort of mentality. And that dated many years ago, and this was one of those training. It didn't work for him. It didn't work for a lot of new sales staff as well. Okay, so that was the case. Why some sales training fail to deliver anything but waste in China, sadly. Sales training content is outdated, or it does not match the current buying practices of customers. Now, as we all know, business has been changing. Customers' buying practices has been changing. In the past, the myth about China is, if you want to sell something in China, all you have to do is to bribe the top guy. And that's the deal is done. That is a myth. What happened in reality is, you got to bribe the gatekeepers first to get to the top guy, then the deal is done. Okay, that's the real thing. But that's in the past. China is no longer that kind of situation. China, it's getting a lot more, business-wise, it's getting a lot more professional. People are a lot more focusing on business results. So it's not so much of, I know you, you know me, and we are pals, we're friends, so you buy from me. No, it's no longer that story. Having good relationships in China, yes, it does give you an edge by putting your foot in through the door. To close a sale, however, you got to prove that you're able to understand the customer's business. You got to really understand and empathize with customers' concerns before you can close the sale. It's getting closer and closer to what's happening in the West in terms of buying practices. Unfortunately, sales practices have yet to catch up in China. Right, so training programs as well.
So the buying processes are things.
Okay. It depends also, depending on which parts of China and what kind of industry are you talking about.
Okay.
Right. The question is, if you have different people and different folks in the sales force, you got a Chinese guy and an American guy, for example, right? And if the American guy goes to see the customer, they get treated differently.
Yeah.
Right. And that difference can be, the type of difference can be different from the first tier cities like Shanghai or Beijing versus the inner cities in Chengdu or in some inner land cities that probably they see one foreigner in 10 years. So they haven't seen many foreigners around, so you get treated differently. It also does not mean that getting treated differently will give you an edge. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes they feel that, oh yeah, you're a foreigner, you're nice, they'll be nice to you, but they may not buy from you because you guys don't really know China. That sort of thing.
It's the other way around. Yeah. You actually have a disadvantage if you're not Chinese.
Right.
Western, from the West.
It also, I understand that. It also depends on the kinds of companies that you're dealing with. Who are your customers? Right, if your customers has got the international outlook, they've done businesses outside of China as well, they've seen the world, so they don't really mind much. Then if you're talking to customers who are very close, they've never really set foot outside of China, then they have this mentality that, no, you don't really know China. And even when I look Chinese, they say, oh, you guys from Singapore, no, you don't really, you're not really China. So it happens. Right, so again, it depends on how you prove yourself to them. It depends on how much you... It's not about... At the beginning, it's not so much about proving to them how much you know. It's all a day. You know, customers don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So it's about how much you care about the industry. Do you know the trends in the industry right now? What are some of the difficulties that... In general, they will be facing with their customers or with their suppliers and so on. What will be some of the advantages of using your products versus what they're having right now, and go on and raise certain questions. You have some pre-call information, and based on that, ask some intelligent questions, show some concern, give them credibility that you know your job, you know their business as well, you know their business in China as well, while at the same time get more information from them. Right, so that's it. Okay, we're talking about ineffective reinforcement or post-string coaching. Again, this is something that has been addressed by Don Kirkpatrick yesterday and later on today as well. The focus on training is the training session itself. And at the end of training session, either the learning points are not being supported by the sales managers, or the salespeople try to apply. You know, it's like learning any new skill. When you try to apply anything that we just learned, it's going to be difficult. Right? We're not geniuses. So when they apply, they find it difficult, they find some obstacles, they find it the going gets tough, but they don't get the kind of support from their managers. And after a while, they give up. So again, it goes back to why 87% of all sales training goes up in smoke within a month. After the training, there's no continual support, right? And when there's no practice, it just loses steam and just goes out of picture. Right, there's no measurement of improvements after the training. But sorry. Right. It depends on who you define as the management you are talking to. Are you talking to the functional management, or are you talking to training management? Okay. Right. Okay, I'll just go into the typical corporate context, and I'll go into your context in a while. The typical corporate context, when we talk to so-called management, usually, even as consultants, we will avoid, if possible, talking to the training managers first. We will want to talk to the functional managers as much as possible. For a simple reason, again, it's at the back of the slides. A lot of HR managers and training managers, there are none here, okay, in China, tend not to know what's going on in their business. They may be good in terms of training administration, right? They can draw beautiful charts, they can plan out, get the right people for the right classes at the right time without missing a heartbeat, but they don't really know what's happening in the business. And when it comes to sales training, it's very closely related to their business. Right. So as far as we're concerned, we want to talk to the managers first. And in terms of receptivity of managers, what we do find is that foreign companies in China tend to be the most receptive for obvious reasons. Right. Foreign companies are more exposed to improving behaviors to improve performance. That kind of level 3 and 4 concepts that it's a lot more accepted and bought in the West. The local enterprise, the local private enterprise, it's a hit and miss. What you need to do most is to show them some examples of how, by doing things your way, you generate better results. So it's a little bit more painful, it's a little bit more drawn out. You need to build trust along the way, build some rapport, and let them accept your ideas, whether it's in sales or any other things. Let them accept your ideas little by little, and let them know that your suggestions is not because you are some foreign expert somewhere who is sitting on some mountain and staring down at them. You have the practical experience in that kind of business, and you have the experience of applying some of your techniques and ideas, and it worked. Whether it's in their market or in external markets, and if you're helping agricultural firms or little agricultural setups to sell to export to the West, then you have a bigger edge, because hey, who are your customers? Are they? Do they look like you or do they look like me? They look like me. Yeah. So listen to me, right? So that from that angle, it tends to build more trust and. Demonstrate to them that you're sincerely helping them to get a better deal for them. Yep. The really pain in the you-know-where is the state-owned enterprise. Basically, if you're dealing with them, they're not really results focused. In a sense, they're not really business results focused sometimes. Not all of them, but some of them. Some of them exist because they used to be a government department and then became a state-owned enterprise, and they're not really an enterprise. They're really bureaucrats. So they don't... whatever you're saying, it depends. It really depends on what this guy wants in terms of their promotional prospects, how he likes you to suck up to him because he loves the feeling, right? And a host of other reasons not relating to business, not sales results. Okay, so those are really the pain in everywhere. So for our first choices, we usually work with foreign companies first and sometimes with local private enterprises in China. Right, so any further questions about training effectiveness? Yeah, and we're talking about improvements in training. If you were to ask any sales manager, why do you want to send your guys to a sales training? And the answer is very simple. It's very standardized anywhere in the world. We want our guys to sell more at higher margins, at higher prices. Right, sell more products, higher margins. So that's the standard answer. But the thing is, sales results, what do you get out of... the sales process, sales results, is actually the final result. It's how you get to that matter more than the results, right? If your processes, if your inputs is garbage, is not working, then you won't get the results you want, right? So when it comes to training, what we are really focusing in terms of sales is to look into what kinds of sales behavior or salesperson's behavior is going to give you better results if you were to practice it. So if you were to measure training improvements, it's not necessarily the final sales figure. It is important too, but in terms of measuring training, you probably want to see are there improvements or changes in behavior in the salespeople. Right, so those are the things that we want to do. Again, it's actually level 3 in Kirkpatrick's model. And what is really lacking is we don't really know. In China, a lot of companies don't really know what are the behavioral differences between the top salespeople and the rest of the team. Right? Behaviorally, it's not a matter of... Some people will say, oh, the top sales guys are top because they're in the business early, they got the best leads, and so on. May or may not be true, but there may be certain kind of behavioral patterns that are existing only in the top guys, but not in everybody else. So it's again, when it comes to training, we really want to develop habits, new sales habits, new sales behaviors, and those kind of improvements are not tracked anywhere else, or anywhere for that matter. Right, getting the wrong person to do the training. in terms of Chinese training managers, what they really like to do is to be absolutely risk-averse, so that if the training screws up, it's not their fault. Right, so by extension, what it means is they will try to get trainers who are from that industry, who's got years of experience in that particular industry. Nothing wrong with that. It's just that at some time, some training needs you probably need some cross breeding of new ideas. Why? Because the industry is changing. Customers are changing. You need probably someone who is very much updated about what's going on in the marketplace right now, as opposed to someone who is there or not there in the past and is still living in the past, not in the present, not in the future. So it's a wrong choice of trainer. Some other ridiculous choices. Trainers are chosen based on their pronunciation accents. You know, in China, it's a big country, just like the States. People from the north pronounce words differently from the south and so on. So some trainers are chosen because they sound good. Sometimes trainers are chosen because they want to see a video clip of the trainer. So if you look nice on stage, well, you've got great stage presence, aren't you? You're chosen. Right? And sometimes trainers are chosen because they got 2 PhDs, 3 master's degrees, and other kinds of qualifications here than everywhere. It looks good on paper. So again, they don't really choose the right kind of person for the right kind of job for that training. Yep. And I mentioned earlier on, getting wrong salesperson to the wrong sales job, it's a matter of hiring issue, right? So if you look at the sales force situation right now, high staff turnover in a sales force, we're talking about, we'll go into figures later on. There's some situation in a sales force in China. There's high staff turnover, there's insufficient attention given to sales training in general in China. Salespeople are supposed to know how to sell something. That's why you're hired. If you don't know how to sell, you're not hired. Right? That's the mentality. Sales training are conducted by internal resources to save costs. Nothing wrong with that. We'll just look into how to do that better. So in terms of staff turnover, two types of staff turnover, voluntary and involuntary. It's a technical jargon. What it means is voluntary from the customer's point of view, they fire the salespeople. Involuntary from a customer's point of view, the salespeople fire their own companies. So either way, it's bad if it's too much. And in China, in some cases, we're talking about a sales force attrition rate of 20% per month. All right. So in 5 months, you got you got brand new faces all around. You don't recognize anyone. So who are you? Right, so what's going on? Sorry.
Oh, I was just wondering why. Is it, in the opening session, they talked about the net 10 generation?
Yeah.
Same thing going on there?
It's complex. The good thing and bad thing in terms of human resources in China is that there are just so many human resources around. It's good and bad. It's good because you got lots of people. The bad thing is that because there are so many people, you usually get swamped with applications. And out of that 10,001 applications for that one single position, you probably need to spend a lot more time sieving through the CVs. And guess what? Chinese people are, in a way, smart, but sometimes smart in the wrong way, meaning they are really skillful in writing CVs, so they all look good. But A lot of them aren't really that good. It's all fake. So the selection process tends to be long, right? And sometimes the HR or the sales manager don't really have the time and resources to really go through all kinds of scrutiny to get the right guy. So you got hiring problems, right? And sometimes In China, no. Someone's gone, they're gone. Right? So there are usually no exit interviews. Except for some very professional companies, professional in the sense that they go through the right processes. Where was I? In terms of recruitment, some companies feel that, since there is an overabundance of people wanting to get a job from us, so it doesn't really matter. If someone didn't work out, we just fire them and get someone new. Right? So they're expendable in that sense. They're a mere commodity in that sense. So, so that goes into that 20%. This is a very extreme case. And again, it's another locally owned media company that deals with industrial publication. So we made a calculation. That previous company that I mentioned about the Swiss-owned media, we used to hire from this company because they got so many people coming out. Right, so we picked the right ones. Many companies do not have a stringent practices to hire the right staff, as I mentioned earlier on. Many salespeople hop to another company just to get a better pay, which is nothing bad. It's just that one of the key things why you want to be a salesperson is for the money. Yeah, but the money is just part of the whole equation. It's one important part, but it's not the one and whole. And if you were digging deeper, most of the time when salespeople leave companies or leave their jobs, it could be a host of reasons. They couldn't get along well with their managers. Managers don't really care about their development, not so much about their personal development, but their development to be better salespeople so that they can make more money and so that the sales manager can make more overriding as well. They don't really care. salespeople sometimes don't see a future with their own company. So since there are no future, there's no growth, not just for me, but for the company too. and they look at the sales managers, they look suck. They just quit and leave, right? So it's not a matter of Chinese employees very materialistic and just hop on to the next job that pays a couple of hundred RMB more. It's about there is nothing else apart from money that a company can give, right? And if that's the case, then they will leave just for a couple of bucks more. Okay, so either side of staff turnover is bad for the company in that sense. The hiring cost of replacing a salesperson is at least six times the base salary, right? Why I say at least, it's you need manager's time to read through all the CVs, you need orientation, you need training, and when the salesperson is told to leave, they're not in the mood to work anymore and so on. But what is worse is the opportunity cost. Because if you have a weak salesperson in place, what's going to happen is they may lose deals which otherwise you can get. And it's not just about losing deals, because if you don't get the deal, guess who gets it? Competitors. Yeah. So yeah, you're just doing a competitor a favor, right? So insufficient attention given to sales training. Now, usually only multinational corporations and well-funded medium-sized foreign companies have structured sales training in China. I have seen, I do know of a local Chinese enterprise that is publicly listed in Singapore. And the CFO, who is Singaporean, talked to me and said, no, the company really needs some sales training now. The markets are bad. This conversation took place in the fourth quarter of last year where the market was really, really horrible. they said, oh, no, we need sales training. No, our salespeople are having problem generating sales. So I asked them, now what do you do for a sales training currently? And what they say is, we shop around for the DVDs and the sales training materials, the DVDs, tapes, and the CDs, and we show them to salespeople. That's how they learn, right? So there's nothing structured, and they don't really are responsible for the sales training results in any way. And I probably get a feeling that I don't think those are even original DVDs, right? So I don't think so. I think they download it somewhere for free somehow, right? Haphazard and piecemeal sales training for most Chinese companies, like the example I mentioned earlier on. And even when they do engage trainers to do the sales training, it's like, it seems like we can't sell at higher prices. We need negotiation skills, specifically price negotiation. We need to get our salespeople to sell at higher prices. It's very knee-jerk action. They don't really go into the deeper reasons. Now, what are the causes of us not being able to sell at higher prices? Is it because the market is bad? Is it because we don't justify our value enough? Is it because of some other reasons? They don't. They just go for a knee-jerk reaction, and it tends to be haphazard and piecemeal. It's not linked into the overall strategy in sales. It's not linked into overall purpose and mission about what it's supposed to do. And it's not aligned in any way to other kinds of training or coaching or managing methods that they have. It's just piecemeal. Well, to put a question in perspective, if you were to look into the modern history of China, modern meaning after liberation, whether you look at liberation or communist takeover, doesn't matter, after 1949 till now, what happens in especially the late 80s to late 90s, What's happening is a lot of enterprises in China got rich, not because they are fantastic in selling, not because they're great in customer service, but because they provide a product that is of decent quality and at very low prices, and that's why they made it big, right? So for these Chinese entrepreneurs, they don't really know, why should I invest in people when it is not the people that make me rich? So they haven't got to that stage yet. They're slowly recognizing that it's going to be the people factor more than the product factor as we get on, as the economy becomes more mature. But as of now, they're still feeling that I'm the boss. No, I invest in capital, I invest in machinery, I got good products, so I should be paid first, not my people. Right? The people are more as an expense, as a necessary evil to get things done, rather than a resource or a capital that I can grow my business. It's still a medieval mindset with regards to people development. Right. So predominantly is that way. So like what I said, and of course the overabundance of the workforce is another issue as well. If someone just doesn't perform well enough, is goofing off on a job, has got bad attitude, I just fire them and get someone new. Right? In China, there are even training programs that say how to discipline the people in line and make them absolutely loyal to you. It's like a lot of managers or even business owners don't think from the perspective that the reason that your staff are loyal or disloyal to you is not just only from their perspective. It's also that what kind of boss, what kind of company you are that makes people come to you and not leave you. Right? So it hasn't really sunk in yet, the people concept. It's slowly getting in there. There are a lot of export-oriented companies right now, especially those that deals with pumps, valves, and other kinds of industrial products. What they do is they participate. The way they sell, by the way, is they participate in trade shows all over the world, right? And obviously, those business owners, they only have something like junior high school education. They don't speak a word of English, and you want to get them to overseas trade shows, it's going to be really tough. So they're willing to pay for top dollar for fresh graduates who are good in English and knows a bit of the products and can really present themselves well in those trade shows, whether it's in Hanover or in Dusseldorf or some other countries, right? So gradually, they are beginning to realize that now they need to invest more in the people and keep on investing more. It's slowly moving, but it still takes a while. And it also depends on the kind of industry. Are they outward-looking or inward-looking and so on? The more outward-looking they are, the more likely they are going to adapt to international standards. It depends. In general, if you're able to get a technician who can double as a salesperson, fantastic. It's good for you. Because from a customer's point of view, they don't really like to talk to salespeople. It's again the perception that how do you tell when a salesperson is lying? You know, the old joke, when they open their mouth, right? So it's still that perception that salespeople are dishonest people or just trying to make a buck from them. And unfortunately, to a large extent, that's true, right? So if you have technicians who tell customers now and say that, no, can I have a look at your equipment, if it's functioning properly, if there are ways that can help you to reduce your maintenance requirements and so on, they'll be very happy. So that is their perception of value. Yeah. Right. Right, so as mentioned, we are focusing on surface problem areas and not in the causes of problem areas. They're just looking at the surface. They're not digging deep enough. And if you're looking for reasons, time factor, resource factor, and conceptual factor, they don't really have that sense to find out why do we have this problem over and over again for the past 10 years. We're still facing the same problems. Why are we still firefighting for generations rather than digging deep and find out what are the root causes and solve the root causes once and for all? it's not a prevalent thought there. Even for established multinationals in China, there's a lack of follow-through, right, in terms of sales training. We did some sales training, everybody's happy, and we just leave it to the salespeople to apply on their own. There are no post-training any kind of work, whether it's together with the help of the sales managers or purely from the consultant's point of view, there are no ongoing coaching or mentoring or reinforcements of the concepts learned. And yeah, of course, there's insufficient attention given to sales training. And like I said, a lot of private enterprises tend, if they want to hire someone, they tend to pay for a higher salary, pay more, to hire someone who is more advanced in skills, rather than to pay less in terms of salary and then you train the guy to sell. The logic is, if I train someone, that someone will just jump and work for my competitors, without thinking that, you know, why would they want to quit in the first place if you are a better employer? Yeah, sorry.
Question, because you mentioned that there is no really any formal program that goes in depth and look at results. If we take a company like Hotwave, for instance, if they came in with their more extensive programs, would it still work? Or is it a culture where, no, that's not the way we do things here, and it would actually backfire because you wouldn't have the management support you wouldn't have?
Uh-huh.
Does that make sense? So there, you don't have those kinds of programs today, mm-hmm. but if the company went in and said that this is the way you can do it and offer those kind of offers, would it work or would it backfire?
Right. The short answer to that is, can a consultant come in at the right price to do the right work?
Okay.
Right. So it's a matter of budget constraints. There are a lot of best intentions from consultants that say we can do additional reinforcement work, the sums-wise, it just doesn't make sense, right? So right now, there's an increasing trend that consultants are more and more engaging the clients to get some of the, especially post-training work, to be done by the clients, whether it's sales managers or in some internal trainers. In fact, I have two requests from different clients, different customers, to ask me to design training programs for them, not to be trained by me, but to be trained by the internal staff. Right, so I design for them and do a trainer and impart the knowledge to them, and they do a training. And what I'll do next as part of follow-up is to audit those training and audit the results as well, or to assist sales managers to audit those results. Yep, so it's going more into that partnership kind of relationship, though not at a very high value level, but it's partnerships to deliver results at lower cost, right? That's an increasing trend there. Okay, in terms of sales training to be conducted by internal resources, like I said, nothing wrong with that. It's just a matter of how you do it right. Some internal trainers lack the up-to-date frontline sales experience. Some internal trainers are just hired as trainers. And it's either they haven't sold anything before in their life, or they've sold something, but that was way ages ago, and they don't really know what's happening on at the front line. We're not saying that only experienced salespeople can be good sales trainers. We're saying that are they aware of what's happening at the front lines, up to date, so that they can address those issues, and so that those issues can be overcome by the sales force. Yep. Then there is this mentality, those who can't do, teach. So sometimes companies just get some formerly a salesperson, looks good, presents good, but just couldn't get a sale in. Could be a host of reasons. But whatever it is, just get someone who used to be a salesperson and just train. And sometimes not to very good results. Okay, if you really want to rely on internal resources, that internal resource has got to spend time doing more joint call sessions with salespeople. Now, the problem with that is that a lot of internal resource tends to be a shared resource. That means they have a training manager that does training not just for sales, but for production, for admin, for finance, for everybody else. And if you've got some general trainer in your company that's doing the sales training, you're unlikely to have joint call sessions. Don't have time. So when that happens, you're unlikely to have good sales training. You need something that is very relevant to the sales force. Okay, you need to address specific challenges rather than following a set training content. a lot of companies has got different training modules set up for training purposes. And again, content that is developed, that is mature, is good. The question is, can you incorporate live case studies? You know, sales is in a way is quite an exciting job. You get to see different people, you get into different situations every day, and it's quite easy to come up with real life case studies that are interesting. It need not be great victories that you got a big sale, right? It can be great failures. It can be neither victory nor failure, but something that is interesting, right? That make people laugh, make people cry, or whatever it is. Put it in as part of the training curriculum, not just relying on set content, but to enliven the training program by having real cases in there, right? And again, it's need to address specific challenges. Again, the more up-to-date cases that you can generate from the sales force, the more you can address the upcoming challenges. As mentioned, customers' buying behavior are constantly changing. You never know what's going to happen. It's not just a major market trend. It can also be happening to the specific companies. People get promoted, people get demoted, people get retrenched, get fired. So whoever is who's buying from you, from that customer's company, may not be around the next time you see them. So you need to have a backup plan. You need to know how to respond to those kind of situations when that happens. Okay, coming on to that, some sales managers who double as internal trainers lack training or coaching skills. So on the other way around, instead of relying on an internal trainer, some companies say that, okay, we're not going to have trainers. We'll get the managers to do a training. The problem is that the sales managers haven't trained anyone in life. So they don't really know how to train. They don't really know how to coach. And in fact, they don't really know how to manage a sales team. Right now, I think I have one slide behind that says that there's research done by a company called HR Chally. They do Salesforce assessments, right? And their research is shown that only about 15% of superstar salespeople can be managers. Right? Only 15% of our top salespeople can be managers. Now, the problem is, who do you usually promote to become sales managers? The best salespeople. And only 15% can be good sales managers. So the moment you promote your best salespeople to be your sales manager, immediately you lost your top sales, because now he's doing a managing job, and in exchange you get a mediocre at best sales manager. Right? And who doesn't know how to train, coach, or manage or lead the team. So some sales managers are better doing sales than being managers. In fact, some sales managers regretted being sales managers. And the problem in China is also, China is, in a way, it's more hierarchical. In jargon, technical jargon means it's got a higher power distance. So whoever has got a bigger rank will have more authority over other people than those with lower rank. So as a result, if you're a salesperson and if you're really, really good, you expect yourself to be promoted without understanding the different responsibilities when you are being promoted. You just want that big title without knowing that. No, it's not just added responsibility. It's a total different role. It's a total different concept. It's total different duties from selling and from managing a team of salespeople, right? So those kind of mentality doesn't help to getting the right salespeople to be promoted as the right sales managers. Right, some sales managers don't have the time to conduct training. And again, if you're really relying on internal resources to do the training, you don't really need to have a 2 full-day training program. Right, sometimes it can be 1 hour, 2 hours, as and when as needed, as long as it's scheduled, it is done in a more disciplined manner, more structured manner, and not just a piecemeal approach. So if you can be flexible on the timing, sometimes the time can be squeezed out from somewhere. right? So some sales managers don't have time. It's usually because those companies think that, oh, training means we have to have a classroom training. It's got to be one full day or two full days, and as a result, sales managers don't have time for the training. What's happening is also a lot of sales managers, when they do training, when they do have time to do the training, what they didn't do is to spend time preparing for the training. And especially when they are non-experienced trainers that can literally wing it, which is not advisable anyway, having insufficient preparation time is going to make it worse for the training program. And the sales team is going to feel like, no, what is this guy trying to say? Why is either this person doesn't really know how to express himself, or I'm really stupid, or both, right? So it's got that kind of feeling to some of these sessions. So some sales managers are not trained to be managers, coaches, or trainers. Before you train a sales manager training skills, you probably need to train them how to be good managers first. And this is something that happens as an afterthought for most companies in China. Right? Basically, those are how bad the situation are, and now the causes behind the madness. We mentioned about bad hiring practices for the sales department, promoting the wrong people. We'll go into this details in a while. Weakness in the training evaluation, no incentive. Okay, so bad hiring practices, these are some of the figures. As you can see, the source is from HR Charlie. Only 90% of new business developers, those that are termed as hunters, are good in maintaining long-term customers. These are people that will go in for the kill, go in for a sale, get the deal, sign on the dot, get the check, get out. Right, so these are the people, they get out and just go for the next deal. Right, they live by going after the next deal. Okay, so only 90% of this kind of people can do customer maintenance and can do account management work. less than 15% of key account managers are comfortable developing new businesses. So those who grow key accounts, you want them to knock on doors and bang on doors to see new customers. They feel really uncomfortable. And only less than 50% can do so quite well. So it's a, if you hire some dexterous, bidexterous salespeople, it's good for you, right? Nearly 65% of salespeople who fail could have succeeded in the right type of sales positions for the skills. So the reason that we are firing the SAMs just now, we showed in case studies, is because probably we put SAM in the wrong type of sales position for the wrong job. Right, few companies in China have a structured or systematic way to hire salespeople that fit. Not just in the right type of sales skills, but also do they fit into their company culture? Can they handle the kinds of customers they're handling? Can they sell in the kind of environment that they're selling? So very few companies in China really have a structured and systematic way to make sure that they get the right people for the right job in the right environment. Right, promoting wrong people, only 15% of superstar salespeople can be good managers. So when you promote a top salesperson to be a sales manager, you just lost best salesperson and you got a poor sales manager. Right, sales managers need help to reinforce key learning points after each training and measure the salespeople's effectiveness. Usually it's not done well. So again, this is a famous adage. Most people leave their jobs. People join the jobs for the company, leave the jobs because of their supervisors. And if the sales managers are not doing a good job, you got high sales staff turnover, which adds on to the vicious cycle of poor sales training, lack of follow-up, poor hiring practices, and even more staff turnover. Right, general weakness in evaluating training needs. Most training managers in China don't know what are specific gaps in the sales force selling skills that need to be addressed by training. So they don't know what's going on in business, they don't know what's going on in the sales force. Their excuse is, they are short of manpower, we don't have time. There are like 1,000 salespeople out there, there are only three of us in the training department, so we don't have time. But what can be done, what could be done, is they can go through the performance appraisals of these salespeople. they can talk to sales managers. Right? It's going to take a little bit more time, but it's not going to take a lot more time. Right? They can go to some other forms of records or statistics or information that will help them form a better picture as to it. It may not be accurate, but at least you are shooting in the right direction, right? Of what are possible gaps or thereof that needs to be addressed by training. Most sales training are conducted without specific learning objectives apart from increased sales. So exactly what needs to be done so that your sales can be increased, right? General speaking, the training programs available in China tends to be hunter and only hunter, and it tends to be the old hunter style, where it's aggressive closing, handle objections and close aggressively. Yeah. So do not leave the customer with a deal on the table. Just wrangle the customer to sign a deal. But unfortunately, most of the salespeople in China, in terms of hiring, they are two extremes as well. It's either they are very extreme aggressive hunters, so they make a pit bull look like a chihuahua, right? They're really aggressive. That's one extreme. The other extreme is they are so customer oriented that they are a doormat in front of customers. Their job is to kowtow to customers and nothing else. Make customers happy. If they're happy, they'll buy from us. That kind of mentality. So it doesn't help if you only have one type of training program. And for that training program, it doesn't help either groups as well. For those who are too aggressive, you need to tone down a little bit on aggressive and be more customer-oriented. For those who are doormat, you got to educate them about how to proactively guide customers' way of thinking and add value as you go along. Right, most sales training are conducted without specific learning objectives mentioned. Apart from increased sales, exactly what kind of behavior do you want to improve to increase sales? Is it because we don't have good prospecting skills? We don't have enough prospects in our database. That's why we are not increasing sales. Is it because we don't find out more about customers' needs? We don't have good questioning techniques. That's why we don't have better sales. Is it because we don't know how customers buy, what are their buying structures and decision-making process? That's why we don't have better sales. So what are the specific challenges that we want to address? Then we go into look into how we can address those and increase sales. Right, post-training, again, it's not done. Right, incentives, what gets paid gets done. It's very simple. It's according to some legend, a salespeople's brain can calculate more accurately and more quickly than any supercomputer on earth about their commissions. Right, so if you put everything else equal, right, a salesperson will sell the product that is easiest for them to sell that will net them the best commission. Not so much the highest commission, usually the easy sale, right? So if you want to, for example, if you want to train your sales staff to sell some new products that are more difficult to sell than old products. And the reason that you want to sell new products is you foresee that this old product, existing product, is going to phase out in about 2 years' time. It's still selling well now, but in 2 years' time, it's going to be phased out. And in 2 years' time, it's the world of the new product. So you want to have a lead over your competitors for the new product before it happens in 2 years' time. Now, to the salespeople, if you're paying the same level of commission for new products and old products, guess which one they'll sell? Old products. It's easy to sell. It's a reordering process. Just say hi to customers, they'll buy. Right? So sometimes you've got to look into, should you pay more? The technical word is called spiff, which means special bonuses or special commissions to push the new products that require twice the effort for half the results, but it's worth it for the company. Or you want to reduce the payouts to the existing products. If there are no upsell, there are no cross-sell, there are no further added value made to that sale of existing products, they get less commissions. Or you want to go into group-based commissions, group-based bonuses, which Dell, not just in China but throughout the world, is implementing well with having group-based commissions for the phone sales, what they call inside sales, the field sales, the ones that go out, their technical sales support, and they work together as a group and get group-based commissions. Right, so if there are no changes in incentives, then there's no change in behavior. And sometimes, if budget is a constraint and you can't really reward for you can't really give monetary reward for some kind of positive behavior. For example, the reason that we're not making more sales is because we don't ask enough good quality questions to find out about customers' needs. And to make sure to drive home the point, we are going to give some incentives for our salespeople so that they ask the right questions. But the thing is, we don't have a budget, especially not at this stage. We haven't got a sale yet. It's just a matter of process improvement. So what can we do? We can give some other kinds of recognition process, right? Or recognition rewards. For those who can tell management, you know, the kinds of questions they ask and the responses they get that meet a certain criteria, they get something. It need not be cash. It can be some kind of prizes. It can be some kind of reward. It can be public announcements on the internal intranet, right? We can have competition on who asks the best questions and get the best response for the month, and feature the guy as the most willing to learn, willing to change salesperson to be a role model for the rest to follow, right? So this is in terms of incentives, it need not be monetary. Sometimes it can be just little gesture. After all, why are so many actors working so hard to get a metal statue of a naked man? The Oscars. You know, it's not money. It's the recognition. Same thing for salespeople as well. Okay, whatever you do about compensation, rewards, incentives, you need to be re-examined, especially if the training is for a structural change within the sales force. Then it has to be re-examined. It varies from industry to industry. Yes. By and large, if you pay cash, everybody is going to be happy.
Sure.
But if you're short on cash, you don't always have to need to pay cash. Mm. Yep, so that's the short answer. At times, cash may not be as good as it's supposed to be. Cash has got this immediate response we make more money, but it doesn't have a lasting response. If you have some kind of prize that is only given to really, really exceptional performance, then those kind of prize may be more coveted than just cash. Yeah. Of course, you can't just have prizes without cash. It's got to be balanced.
But only in the typical industries in China where those kind of non-cash incentives are more valuable?
It depends on the corporate culture.
Yeah.
So if the culture, unfortunately, a lot of sales organizations are built around let's make money, right? You work hard, you make more money. You don't work hard, the reason you are not making money is because you don't work hard enough, right? So if it's just built on money and cash, then that's all it is, and you get salespeople getting more and more commissions and still not satisfied, and they just go on to some other companies. Right, so that's how you arrange in the corporate culture. In terms of motivating salespeople, in fact, if you were to really look into what really motivates salespeople, it's not the cash. Well, it is one part eventually, but what is the immediate motivation is the salesperson needs to see that if I change my behavior, I can succeed better, I can perform better. It's the belief, it's the confidence that I can do better if I make the changes. Right, so if there's no belief that they can perform better, you can place $1 million in front of them, and you don't get any action if they don't believe it. Right, so it's that mechanism there. Right, if you want to have better results, a few areas. One is how you design programs, how you get the right trainers, how you ensure post-training performance. And in terms of design, develop sales training, well, define your needs and objectives. And this slide was created before Don Kirkpatrick gave his Ballroom A session yesterday. And I got it right. His first one is define needs. Oh, sure. Okay, I got it right. Right. So, what are some of the key current challenges that you face for Salesforce right now, and what are the causes behind these key challenges? Like I said, sales are falling. So why? Why are we not doing better sales? What are the causes behind those? Observe the positive deviance, another technical word. What it means is, what are the things, especially behaviors, that your top sales is doing and others aren't? Okay, what are some kind of behaviors that are demonstrated by top sales but not everybody else? So can you extract those best behaviors or best practices as part of those sales processes and impart to everybody else? Right, identify the new skills that need to be developed to meet future challenges, not just about now. What we mentioned about positive deviance is about the best practices now. And what we need to see is also in the future. What will be the gradual shifts in terms of the markets, in terms of customers' buying behavior, in terms of customers' preferences? So you need to be constantly be looking one or two steps ahead and decide what you want to do for salespeople in the near future. We build your own case studies. Mentioned if there are interesting stories, build them as case studies into your training program. Salespeople love it because they know whoever is doing the training really spends time understanding them. It's their version about, it's not how much you know about sales, or sales training. It's about how much you care about what kinds of problems they're facing, and you care about giving them solutions that may work. Right, make it convenient. You don't really have to have two full days training each time, especially if it's internal training. Do you need to fly everyone to one single location for training? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. You can do training in a distributed manner, especially, again, if it's done by internal trainers. For external trainers to reduce costs, sometimes this is what companies do. Fly everybody to one location and get it trained. Right, but if there's work to be done by internal staff, it can be distributed. Make it fun and interesting. Play games, run simulations, run small simulations if you want to. Role plays, discussions, people love it. By the way, e-learning has got one of the lowest rates of adoption in China. Right? Because in China, training is not just about learning something. It's a social thing. Right? It's about interaction between the trainees and the trainers and among trainees. So this is why, you know, they want to get together and discuss things, role plays, catch up on old stories, share their war stories, and have a fun time together, right? So there's a preference for live training. They like to interact with one another. So role plays, discussion, games, very important. Yes, sir.
Perspective? When you do role plays, I found that sometimes the losing face culture mm-hmm. that exists in China and other Asia,
right.
that they won't give it. Everything is good.
Yeah.
Everything is great. Oh, you did this great. You did this good. Nothing is ever bad.
Right.
Then you have the losing face.
Right. Right. Okay. How to protect the face when role play? There are a few aspects. One is to phrase everything in positive terms.
Yeah.
So instead of asking people what did you do wrong,
yeah.
well, you rephrase it as in what could you have done better. Right. Sometimes the trainer will have to take a lead in giving suggestions first, and then throw it to the team. Now, I understand that in the West, it happens in Singapore too, that you want to give a critique. Usually, the trainer will get the other groups to give the critique first, right? And then the trainers add. In China, most of the time, is the trainer will have to take the lead, and then if there are further to add, it probably will go through a few role plays before the groups are. Happy enough to give their contributions. Again, on face matter, you want to do role plays. At the beginning, it will be good to do group role plays. Right? So they nominate someone in a group and they do a role play so that it becomes a group effort rather than it becomes an individual effort. Yeah. So whatever activities you add on, be sure to have a debriefing. Again, this is. By the way, team building training in China is dirt cheap because it's not perceived as training. It's perceived as fun and games. And the reason it's that is debriefing. They don't really align or relate the lessons learned in those games to work or to strategy. Yeah. Yeah, they're premium ones. They're exceptions. Yeah.
So I was just wondering, how is that industry doing, and how do you know how they're doing as a company?
I will not complain. Well, the business sort of stalled a little for this few months for economic reasons. But they target the premium multinational companies. So they target the premium customers to know about the value of team building. What I'm saying is, in general terms, in many companies, whether they are local or foreign-owned, team building tends to be perceived as fun and games, right? And it's got to do with a lot of team building consultancies who pitch themselves as, you know, in this team building, we are going to have X number of games, rather than what are the objectives of that team building. Yeah, so that's the situation there. Right. I think we don't have time for this case study, but basically it's just a matter of choosing what kind of a trainer. If you're on a shortlist trainer, there are four trainers here. John, a retired veteran for many years. Yasser, lively trainer who speaks with a strange accent. Judah, a balance trainer who is booked to the brim, very busy. Lowly, not really an exciting trainer, but spends a lot of time of effort designing great training materials. And this is a trick question, because it depends on what is the objective of that training, right? Do you want something that is very technical, that is very detail-oriented? No, you don't need to have lively training for that. You need the real stuff, the real content. So you might want to get a fourth trainer. Is pronunciation very important, and so on, right? Oh, the next trainer is here. My God, okay. Well, basically, we're more or less done. Well, we've covered more or less most of the things I mentioned earlier on. You can download slides. Before we officially end, if there are further questions, feel free to send me an email. And the site below, sakiselling.com/page4.html, that's the archive newsletters for my website. We are the only sales consultancy based that is originate and based in Asia that has monthly in-depth analysis of what's going on in sales in the region. Right, can check it out. If you have a computer here, you can go online, just check it out. Last but not least, evaluations are coming around. If you like, dislike, or if you have any suggestions for improvement sessions, please do so. Right, and without taking up the next trainer's time, thank you for your time.